Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. Thanks for being with us today. Always a pleasure to have you listening. Today is National Pancake Day. Okay, fine. Better it done. I know what I'm doing after the show. Pancakes. All right, here's an interesting story out of the Vatican City. Pope Francis says people might be better off if they check their Bibles as frequently as their smartphones. Speaking in St. Peter's Square Sunday, the pontiff wondered what it would be like if pocket versions of the Holy Book were treated with the same care, if people pulled them out on train rides and made sure not to leave them behind. Francis said it would make us more capable of accepting and loving our brothers, especially the most vulnerable and needy, and even our enemies. You think if you pulled out a copy of the New Testament every time you thought of reaching for your phone, what that would do for your spiritual life? Probably a lot. All right, here's an Uber driver in New York. He was picked up a woman that was pregnant and on the way to the hospital because of traffic. Uh-oh, guess what? She has to have the baby right now. So he pulls over, calls 911. The police officer comes, and they deliver the child on the expressway. That's kind of nice. And I would assume the Uber driver got a better-than-average tip, but I don't know that for a fact. All right, Mercedes is coming out with the world's most expensive SUV. This little guy is going to cost $500,000 and has a convertible top and thermal cup holders, because we all know how important it is to keep that cup of coffee warm. Okay, here's something I found interesting. It does have a glass window that can separate the front seat from the back seat. So I'm just trying to think, parents, if that can actually reduce the noise from the back seat, that feature alone would make the whole thing worth it. $500,000, and you can actually hit that button, and there's the glass, and you can't hear your kids. There you go. All right, Minnesota Viking Chad Greenway is retiring after 11 seasons. We'll miss him. He was a great asset to the team and always brought a lot of great energy. So enjoy retirement, Chad. What are you, 33? Good luck. All right, here's the National Weather Service will be examining storm damage after a tornado was spotted headed from Princeton to Zimmerman, Minnesota last evening. That is crazy to have a tornado this time of the year. Severe storms tore through southeast Minnesota last night, and the storm stretching as far as south as Oklahoma. Nickel-sized hail and 60-mile-an-hour winds were reported in parts of the state last evening. Oh, all right. So I want to just, before we go to break and bring on Dr. David Stevens, I want to just remind you of what Jesus said in John 14:27. He said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give it to you as the world gives. Your heart must not be troubled or fearful." There is plenty of things to feel troubled about and fearful. So let's just be reminded of what Jesus says, that his peace does not look like the kind of peace the world offers. It comes from him personally. How awesome is that? So we take a break. We're going to talk to Dr. David Stevens and all the things that are going on. I'm going to ask him about this Obamacare, this what appears to be the new revised version of it, and what he thinks and where he thinks it's going. 7 minutes after the hour, we'll be back in a minute. Nine minutes after the hour, good morning, Bill Arnold here. I always love talking to Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and he is on our studio line. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Say, okay, this Obamacare now is in full bloom, the Obamacare replace repeal, and I'm dying to find out what you're thinking about this.
Well, it sprung on us last night. There's been a lot of talk and discussion about what might happen, and now we know at least some of what is going to be proposed.
Okay.
Because they're having to go through the reconciliation process, which means mainly what this can deal with that they put out now is just the financial aspect of this, because it's going to be part of the budget bill that goes to the Senate, and you get that passed with 50 votes. So there's a number of things. It's called the American Health Care Act. So I don't know if they'll start calling it Trump Care, but it's the American Health Care Act. And essentially what it's going to do is repeal a lot of the mandates, the fines, and how insurance is bought and offered. The goal of this is really, I think, from those proposing it, to return control back down to the state level. And instead of having federal subsidies, as we do now, for low-income people, it will actually be a tax credit. Now, what does that mean? That means when you're paying your taxes, you'll get a credit. And so if you don't owe much taxes, you may even get money back. That amount will be $2,000 to $14,000 for people who have difficulty affording insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is putting control back into the individual's family's life and let them make decision on what insurance they want to buy. Now it's kind of one size fits all. Here's the bronze plan, here's the gold plan, here's the silver plan. You can pay more up front and pay less when you get sick, or you can take a chance and with a plan and pay more later and pay less now. That's essentially the option. There's over 30 mandated free services in Obamacare. So what they're doing is saying, no, let's let people get the insurance they need. A guy doesn't need to pay for maternity care. Under the plan now in Obamacare, you pay for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You pay for every service whether you want it or not. So that's some of the few things that are coming.
Well, when I think about the way the insurance markets are and the companies are dropping like flies and everybody is withdrawing from the markets, it seems that if we don't, if there isn't some kind of way to get people back on board and get health insurance competitive, there's just going to be more and more problems. I'm assuming that the doctors are fairly miserable in this process as well.
We are. There's some good things. I mean, the fact that people don't get chucked out for pre-existing conditions, and that's going to continue under the American Health Care Act. That you can keep kids on your insurance till they're age 26. That's
mm-hmm.
going to continue. Those things, I think, have been helpful, and they're going to be retained. But there has been a huge level of new bureaucracy, which has really weighed down healthcare professionals and the amount of work and bureaucracy they have to deal with. And that is really creating a great sense of dissatisfaction, because the satisfaction in the doctor-patient relationship is exactly that. It's the doctor-patient relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that, if you're sitting there looking at a computer screen for, you know, three-fourths of the visit, filling out forms that are demanded, it's not very satisfying for the patient. It's not very satisfying for the doctor. And secondly, I don't think it's as good a health care, because you're not spending time on the most important thing: how can I help this patient?
Mm-hmm. David, I have a question about the repeal and replace. If there are elements of the Obamacare that they want to carry forward, is it then still a complete repeal and replace, or is it then a repair? I know this might be just technical talk, but pre-existing conditions is smart. Let's keep that. Let's keep the insurance for kids up to age 26. That's all good. So if those elements get included in the new plan, will people say, no, you're still using Obamacare?
Yeah, some people will. They'll say Obamacare light.
Okay.
There's going to be a real knockdown, drag-out fight in Congress. And this, what we're hearing about today, isn't exactly what we're going to get. I can tell you that. Because even, you know, to get this through the Senate in particular, there's only, 1-2 margin vote. So you've got to get, if the Republican Party is pushing this, you've got to get all the Republicans on board, and already some are saying, no, this is not enough. We should do more. Same thing in the House. So there's going to be a lot of bargaining. There's a markup is the next session of what's going to happen in the Energy and Commerce and Ways and Means Committees. And what that means is they're going to really draft the final version of what this looks like. And then it'll go to the Senate, and they'll have an option to, you know, modify it even more. So what we'll actually end up with, one thing that's going to happen, you know, we think about Obamacare and the insurance plans we've all heard about, but one of the things people mostly don't realize, Bill, is that this really expanded Medicaid and increase the levels people could get Medicaid. And now there are 70 million people in the United States, almost one out of four, who are on a Medicaid program. And it's a very open-ended program that the government just said, here's money, and we'll pay for all this, and the state's not having to pay as much. That's going to change under this new policy. And they're going to, in 2020, start slowing that down, giving states more control. There's going to be, on regular insurance, you buy competition across state lines, which tends to drive prices down. You're going to allow people to increase their health care savings accounts, which is something we use here at CMDA, and it is really good because you're using your money to buy health care. You look at it differently when you do that. And if you don't spend the money, it can be invested and grow and be used for later years for Medicare parts and stuff that you have to buy when you retire. So there's a number of good things. Now, one thing people are going to be talking about is this defunds Planned Parenthood, at least for a year. It may be longer. And that's something that a lot of conservatives have been pushing towards, of why are we giving $500 million in subsidies to Planned Parenthood when almost all they do is abortions.
So there's going to be some name-calling and fist-shaking, isn't there?
There already is.
Yeah. All right.
It started last night as soon as this was released.
All right, David, I'm going to take a little break, but I've got lots more questions for you. This is 15 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold here. I'll be right back. Eighteen minutes after the hour. Good morning. I'm talking to Dr. David Stevens. We're actually trying to make sense of the Obamacare light, which is being presented by the opponents of it. And it seems that what they're kind of saying is, if this thing happens, that insurance companies, if they get put back in charge, it would rip away health care from millions of Americans. So is that a scare tactic, or what exactly is that, David?
Well, I mean, there's always a little bit of truth in most scare tactics. And the problem is, how do we get from where we are now with Obamacare, which has been gradually being, put into place over the last 4 or 5 years, how do we get to what the next thing is without making people suffer? And there's going to be a lot of discussion about that and who might lose coverage. And, of course, our representatives and senators are very concerned about, they're coming up for election in the next cycle, of what that's going to look like. So, this is a very, very tough thing. The bottom line is Obamacare was failing and the prices were increasing. I know here in Tennessee, where we're based, we're paying over $18,000 for family coverage. And I mean, that's huge. You can't have, the biggest problem in healthcare bill is what? It costs too much. The reason people don't have insurance is a symptom of the problem. The reason they don't have insurance is they can't afford it. They can't afford it because it costs too much. So what we heard about last night is just the opening salvo of this. There's going to be a lot more things that have to be dealt with. There's nothing in this about dealing with the enormous high cost of medications and prices going through the window. Generic drug companies cornering the market on drugs. Let me give you an example of that. One of my staff got a puppy at the pound, found out later the puppy had worms, it hadn't been dewormed. They worried about their kids and said to me, we went to our doctor and he said, well, let's wait and see what happened. And I said, oh, man, you don't need to do that. I mean, we lived in Africa. We just dewormed our kids every 6 months. It's one pill. It doesn't have any toxic effects. Just deworm the kids and that's the end of it. So I wrote him a prescription, one tablet for a member of the family. There were six of them. You know what the price was for the tablets? $200 a piece.
Wow.
You know what we pay for them in Africa?
What?
5 cents.
Wow.
So we had a drug that is a generic drug. It had been cornered by a drug company. They had taken the price up to $200 a tablet. And that type of thing's got to be dealt with. We've got to get the price of drugs down because that's part of health care cost as well. And this type of exploitation takes place. So there's other things that need to be done, how we approve new drugs. Now, if I found the cure for cancer tomorrow that could cure every cancer in the United States, it would take me $1 billion to $2 billion to get it approved and 10 years to get it done. we have gone too far into that area of just making sure everything is perfectly safe down to the nth degree and made it so expensive we can't get innovation done. And the only way that groups can do it is huge drug companies can have that kind of funding and to make that happen and can work their way through the bureaucracy. So there's a lot of things that increase the cost of health care, and those have to be dealt with as well. Malpractice, you know, used to the bad doctors got sued, then a lot of doctors get sued. Now just everybody gets sued.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how good you are, if anything doesn't come out right, so how do we do make sure that people have been harmed, get a settlement, but make sure that all the nuisance suits and other things, and there's ideas around about how to handle that. So it's a very multifaceted problem, but I think this is a good first step in the fact that we're putting control back into individuals' hands. If I go to buy a car, I want to buy a car that suits my family,
mm-hmm.
depending on its size and everything else. What we've had now with Obamacare is one size fits all. So your car may be way too big in what you're paying for in insurance, or it may be insurance package too small for what you need. We need to have the choice that we have in everything else as we buy insurance. And by giving tax credits, here's money to let you go buy your policy. It increases competition, and it also lets you get exactly what you need for your family and its situation.
Okay, David, I remember when Obamacare was getting launched, and they had the CBO score that came out, and there was a senator that I remember hearing saying, oh, we are so giddy. We are so giddy because these CBO numbers came in so good. And it was not even close to being what reality was. So when we start getting information about this new proposal and a CBO score, how much of that can we trust?
Yeah, I'd take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
You know, I said the biggest problem in healthcare is it costs too much. Obamacare, $2 trillion more in cost. So the problem is cost. So what we did with Obamacare was increase cost, which makes this unsustainable. When you're paying $1 out of $5 is about the price now for health care in the United States, almost twice as much as any other country in the world, and everybody assumes, well, we've got better health care. No, people are healthier in other countries in Europe that pay a lot less than we do. We've got some basic problems in how we are handling this that have to be addressed. We're paying a high price for a medium quality of health care. Yes, there's a lot of innovation in the United States, but our people are not more healthy than other places in developed countries. So there's a lot of issues that they're trying to balance as they look at this.
Mm-hmm. It is going to consume Congress most of the year, isn't it?
I think so. Even though they're saying they're going to push this through and have vote in the Senate by Easter, I would be really surprised if that happens. But who knows? I think Congress is going to have a lot of long sessions between now and August. And if we see something by the August break, I think they've done pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And what is the one thing as a doctor that you're most excited about seeing come out of this?
Well, hopefully we're going to try to decrease the cost of health care and drop that barrier,
okay,
which is making it difficult for people to get the health care we need. We want people to have health care, bottom line, but a centralized government system that Obama put up in Obamacare hasn't worked very well, and we've got to have something different.
Mm-hmm. David, $200 seems like a lot for a deworming pill. But you might be able to use that as a motivation over your kids. You make your bed or you won't get your deworming pill.
Well, you know, I went downstairs. We do a lot of short-term mission teams. Went down to our storage, went in and got the pills that were a nickel apiece and gave them to the family.
Oh, that's outstanding.
And solved the problem.
Yeah. David, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for your insight and your expertise. And have a great week.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. God bless.
Yep. Thanks. 25 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back. Minutes after the hour. Good morning, everyone. Bill Arnold here. Coming up after news, we're going to talk to Barry Black, the chaplain of the U.S. Senate. That is going to be a riveting conversation. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute. Are we honoring God with our money? Financial counselor Rachel Cruz encourages us to keep in mind why we are saving money and living frugally, and to remember to tithe.
there is joy on the other side. Yeah, you're doing this definitely for a reason. And ultimately, you know, our goal for a lot of people is just, okay, be able to go be debt-free, fund retirement, fund your kids' college, pay off your house, build wealth, and give a lot of it away. I mean, it's amazing what we can do as a body of Christians if we all come together and say, okay, let's just pour money and resources into things that need it around the country. I mean, the stats are amazing. 2.3% of evangelicals tithe on a regular basis. And you think, what if every Christian tithed 10%? If they did that from 06 to right now, there'd be over $190 billion in the kingdom of God. And you just think that it's amazing what we could do if we poured our time and resources into each other. But a lot of us can't because we're living paycheck to paycheck. There's not margin. So yeah, you're freeing it up for your own legacy to be changed and for the legacy of others.
To find the full interview online, go to myfaithradio.com. Rachel Cruz, I'm talking, she's actually Dave Ramsey's daughter. If you don't want to catch that. We'll take a little break. When we come back, Chaplain Barry Black. Be back in a minute.
I try not to make promises I can't keep. But here's one promise I feel confident enough to make to you today. Your teen will mess up. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Sooner or later, something's bound to happen. She'll get caught driving too fast and come home with a speeding ticket, or he'll put off studying and flunk the big history test. When our teens blow it, we often think that we need to be the consequence. We'll pull away, retract our love, and give them the cold shoulder. But don't you think a failing grade or a speeding ticket is punishment enough? The next time your teen messes up, keep loving them while you let the natural consequences do their work. Your love shouldn't change once your kid messes up. And believe me, he will mess up.
For more great tips from Mark Gregston, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Seven minutes after the hour. Good morning, everyone. Bill Arnold here. Barry Black is the chaplain of the U.S. Senate. He's had that job for 14 years. He was originally with the Navy for 27 as Rear Admiral, and he's been with the chaplain as the Senate chaplain for 14 years. Remarks have been made that there's never been a better one since there's been a U.S. chaplain, and the first one was a guy named William Lynn. He started his job May 1st, 1789. So you got some competition, and you've risen to the top, and he was the keynote speaker at the National Prayer Breakfast, which I watched last night, and then I couldn't get to sleep because he had me all wound up. So thanks a lot, Barry.
Well, it's my honor to be with you, Bill.
Yeah, but you got me all excited last night after I watched your keynote. I couldn't get to sleep.
Well, I would say the Holy Spirit got you excited, Bill, because he was the one who was using me.
Isn't that the truth? And I just absolutely loved how your story started. You talked about your mom at a very young age. You used to use a little bit of financial encouragement for you and your siblings to memorize Scripture. And you're no dummy. You went to the shortest verses in the Bible.
Yes. Well, my siblings followed in my train. The reality is there's nothing like a monetary incentive to motivate your children to get into the Bible. And I did the same thing with my sons. The only problem was it took a dollar a verse instead of a nickel a verse by the time I got married.
Yeah, everything is inflated, isn't it?
You
know, I'm so
But you could get about the same for the dollar as you could for the nickel when I was growing up.
That's a very good point. You know, I'm very curious when I hear the chaplain to the Senate. It always makes me wonder what your day-to-day, what your days look like. And do people from the Senate come specifically to you? Do you reach out to them, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both, Bill. I am their pastor away from home. There is a physician for the Senate.
Okay.
And because they can't go to their hometown position. The senators and the staffers are away from home.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the office of the physician of the Senate. Well, I am the spiritual physician of the Senate.
Amen.
And they can't go to their pastor many times. I mean, you can call them on the phone, but there's nothing like having someone right there with you. And so since 1789, in fact, predating the Establishment Clause to the First Amendment, the framers thought that they needed a spiritual presence in the lower and the upper chambers of the legislative branch. And so we've had chaplains, and chaplains have been praying almost uninterrupted since 1789, convening each session of the Senate with a prayer.
That's awesome. Now, I'm curious, tell me, like, in a typical day, would a meeting last anywhere from 2 minutes to an hour? I mean,
if it's a counseling session with a staffer,
okay.
There are approximately 7,000 people who make up the Senate side of Capitol Hill.
Wow.
So it could be anything from an interpersonal relationship challenge, a vocational challenge, a financial challenge, a spiritual challenge, an intellectual challenge, a social challenge. So that's how the counseling goes. But I also conduct 4 Bible studies every week, so there's a religious education outreach to the office. One is just for the senators, one is for the chiefs of staff, and then 2 plenary Bible studies where anyone who desires to come may do so. And then we have a prayer breakfast every week on Wednesday morning where the lawmakers come together, both sides of the aisle. Every time the Senate is in session, we have that. I do spiritual mentoring classes, a much smaller group, helping people to learn how to become spiritually fit, to master the spiritual disciplines. I do hospital visitations. I officiate at weddings, funerals, and memorial services. So I'm a full-time pastor for a church of about 7,000 people.
Wow. All right, what changes have you seen in America, the spiritual climate, in the last 14 years you've been chaplain in the Senate?
Well, I think that basically in the Senate reflect what's going on outside of the Senate. So the polarization that you see outside of the Senate, mm-hmm. you also see on Capitol Hill. I think there are, as Paul says in Philippians 4, saints in Caesar's household. So mm-hmm. there are passionate people of faith on Capitol Hill who sigh and cry and intercede and send their prayers up, who fast and pray, who do spiritual warfare. So it's just as, again, outside of Capitol Hill, there are passionate believers. There are passionate believers on Capitol Hill. And I think the God we serve is in charge. He's never sitting on his throne, wringing his hands, wondering, what are we going to do next? There's a wonderful hymn, "This is my Father's world. Oh, let me ne'er forget that though the wrong seems oft so strong, God is the ruler yet." And I think there are hundreds of people on Capitol Hill who believe that, and a significant percentage of our lawmakers who believe that as well.
Mm-hmm. I would say that our country is now has a considerable amount of fear about what's going on politically, fear what's going on with their cities and communities, with violence, with all kinds of things. But you have conveniently written a book called Nothing to Fear, and talk a little bit about that.
Well, Bill, I was fasting and praying with several hundred other people on Capitol Hill 6 months away from the election that God's will would be done.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 months into my intermittent fast, I was having one meal a day for 6 months, as were others. God just placed in my spirit that verse in Matthew 10 that says, "Behold, I send you forth as lambs in the midst of wolves." And I've heard that text many, many times, but reading it, went to the book and looking at the context, it just amazed me that a good shepherd would send not a sheep, but a lamb, a mm-hmm. baby sheep, into the midst of the predatory. I mean, one wolf could eviscerate, mm-hmm. sheep. But here is a single lamb or lambs in the midst of wolves. And so I toyed with that, and I just got a download, is all I can say, from the Spirit. And very rapidly churned out Nothing to Fear, Principles and Prayers to Help You Thrive in a Predatory World. And God basically said to his disciples as he sent them into the midst of the predatory, you need a tough mind and a tender heart. You need to be wise as a snake and innocent as a dove. There are a lot of Christians who have, and people of faith who have innocent hearts, you know, and there's a certain naivety to that. Joseph coming toward his brothers in Genesis 37, thought he was in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and his brothers had a predatory instinct. Behold, the dreamer comes, and Joseph is, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. So it's not enough to have the innocence of a dove. You need the tough mind that the Apostle Paul had when they were about to flog him, and Paul says, you mean to tell me you're about to flog a Roman citizen? And they said, you're a Roman citizen? So Paul was able to avoid a beating because he had a tough mind.
Yeah.
Jesus had a tough mind when he said to Peter in Matthew 16:23, get thee behind me, Satan. Now, to call one of your closest followers your adversary after telling him seven verses earlier, flesh and blood have not revealed this unto you, but my Father in heaven. That's a tough mind. But he was so committed to Calvary that he had that spirit. That's the spirit that we need to thrive, not just survive, but thrive in a threatening world. Yeah. And so the book unpacks that whole experience of Jesus and his disciples and helps us to see that we too can have tough minds and tender hearts.
Now you've got me too excited to even take a nap today. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with the chaplain, Barry Black. Be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour, talking to Chaplain Barry Black. I've got lots of things to ask, so I'm going to talk fast, Barry. What is it like when you talk to a senator who might have private convictions about an issue, but then they act quite differently publicly about them?
Well, I talked to the senator about having ethical reasons for his action and to understand that with a right versus right conundrum, that he needs to have ethical reasons based upon biblical principles for his actions. So I sometimes will even give philosophical reasons like Kant, live in such a way that your action can be made universal law, or John Stuart Mill, strive to do the most good for the most people, or our blessed Lord, what you don't want done to you, don't do to someone else. So I simply attempt to provide lenses for the lawmaker to look through so that he or she can be comfortable and be able to give a reason, as Peter said, for why they did what they did.
That's great. Now, your book, Nothing to Fear, I want to read something from it because this struck me, that you say we remain fearless in a dangerous world by allowing God to help us become the right kind of soil that God can use in a wholesome and productive way. Soil that will bring forth exponential growth, 30-fold, 60-fold, even 100-fold. And you practice these following principles, and you lay these out. Live productively, open your mind to truth, think things through. Well, that's a big one for me. Don't crowd out the important things.
In Matthew chapter 13, there's the parable, some say, of the sower, but it's the parable of the four soils, and there's a wayside soil, rocky soil, thorny soil, and good soil. The good soil brings forth exponentially. And we're told the characteristics of those soils. So it's important that we be good soil, soil that God can use, for one thing, to not let the cares of this life, the deceitfulness of riches, and the lust for other things, as in the thorny soil, choke our dreams. So we can work at, once we understand the different kinds of soil, being the kind of productive soil that God would have us to be. And that, those are some of the things we need to think through in order to maximize our possibilities by God's grace and for his glory.
Barry, another thing from this, the book, a point you make is translate hearing into action. That's a tough one for a lot of people. How can you encourage us?
Well, Jesus said, "Why call me Lord and do not the things that I tell you to do?" Mm-hmm. And he ends his Sermon on the Mount. The conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount is, those who hear these words of mine and do them will be like the person who builds his or her house on the rock. The key is John 14:15, Bill. Our blessed Lord said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." And 2 Corinthians chapter 5 says the love of Christ controls us. So I find that when you love, when it's a relationship and not just fear of hell or the desire for heaven, it makes all of the difference in the world. There will be, as the spiritual says, something within you that holds the reins.
Mm-hmm. Now, Barry, you spend all day in a city that deals a lot with worldly issues all day long. I get the feeling you spend not as much time thinking about worldly issues, and you spend most of your time thinking about heavenly issues and how you can connect those to the people you're serving.
Well, Colossians chapter 3, verse 2 says, "Set your affection on things above and not on the earth beneath." Mm-hmm. You know, if I had a billionaire, and I do have a few billionaire friends, mm-hmm. but if I had one of my friends saying, "Barry, I'm preparing a place for you in Manhattan. I know you like New York, and that's what I'm doing," I wouldn't think very much of anything else during the day than that place that person is preparing for uh-huh. me. Well, Jesus said, "I go to prepare a place for you," and yet most of us rarely think about heaven or think about that place that he is preparing. So if we obey Colossians 3 and set our affection on things above, we'll discover that it will have a transforming impact on what happens to us in the present.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your parents, because I think they did something really right.
Well, my mother, as I said in my National Prayer Breakfast speech, gave my siblings and me a monetary incentive for memorizing the scriptures, and she realized that she was inoculating us for the pathology that we would have to deal with in our environment. My father was not really around much. He was a long-distance truck driver, and we saw him sporadically. Mm-hmm. I often say he had a nomadic existence. Mm-hmm. But my mother, a woman who had us in church every time the church door opened. So mm-hmm. we were there for Wednesday night prayer service and Sunday evening evangelistic meetings and for divine worship, and we had something called missionary volunteer and early morning prayer service. So we stayed in church, and there are some things that are taught, but there are many things that are caught. And when you're sitting there listening to preaching and testimonies and the amazing lyrics of Christian hymns, those things will have a transformative impact on your life. So I had a very wise mother.
Mm-hmm. And you, she really helped you develop your God-given gifts, because I love every question I ask you, Barry. You start by responding with Scripture. This is an inspiration to me.
Well, John 17:17 says,
Barry,
your word is truth, and I try to speak the truth.
And you do a fantastic job. I think of Jesus in the wilderness when he was being tempted by Satan. He starts every response with, "It is written." He goes right to the word.
There you go. Well, you know, Ephesians 6 calls the word of God the sword of the Spirit, and it is the only weapon for offense in that amazing armor in Ephesians 6. So we better know how to say "it is written." And we also have to rightly divide, because like the devil in the wilderness in Matthew 4, he wrongly divided.
Yeah.
We have to know how to rightly divide 2 Timothy 2:15, the word of truth.
Okay, Barry, here's my plan. I'm going to become a U.S. senator just so I can hang with you.
Well, that's great. Well, I look forward to it, and I hope that Providence makes that a reality for you, Bill.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Be blessed.
You bet. It's 57 Bye-bye. Minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Eight minutes after the hour, that wraps up Faith Radio Mornings today. Rebecca, I don't know about you, but Barry was amazing, wasn't he?
I was just amening the whole time.
I was amening too the whole time.
Taking notes.
Yep. And I want to close out the show today with what he was referring to in Colossians 3. "Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. And this is the verse he chose, Colossians 3:2, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. I know we got to focus on some earthly things today. Keep your mind, though, set on things above, and you will have a great day. Thanks for being with us. Lots more today on Faith Radio. Keep your dial tuned. I'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.